This morning, we are focused on the segment from Ernest Holmes in the book Creative Mind and Success. And there were three short segments. One is called What We Will Attract. One is more about the power of attraction. And the third one is How to Attract Friends. And reading through this, I have to say that this is my favorite reading from Creative Mind and Success so far this year. This is a very powerful piece of Ernest Holmes' writing, and parts of it actually appear in the textbook in much the same form, because when we got the part of How to Attract Friends, I realized that that segment from Creative Mind and Success had been picked up quite fully in the Science of Mind textbook, and I've quoted it a number of times in the last 20 years that I've been teaching Science of Mind because it appealed to me so much. And so I'm really excited that I got to speak today. It was divinely ordained that it was mine to do. And although I haven't done this in any of my talks up until now, I've used the readings as a jumping off point. I actually want to read you part of the reading this time because it feels highly focused and relevant to me. So in the section on what we will attract, the parts that I highlighted are, we will always attract to us in our lives and conditions according to our thought. Things are but outer manifestations of inner mental concepts. Thought is not only power, it is also the form of all things. All the power of the universe is within you. Feel it, know it, and then act as though it were true. This mental attitude alone will draw people and things to you. Use the wonderful power of will that God has given to you. Refuse to think of failure or doubt your own power. See only what you wish to experience and look at nothing else. So just take a breath and let's feel what that means. That things are outer manifestations of inner mental concepts. In Science of Mind, we say thoughts are things. As we focus, as we use the power of will, as he says, that God has given us, as we use the power to focus, we are focusing the energy that creates life. And that's a very powerful idea. If we begin to believe that the power is within us, we stop looking at the externals as authority in our life, and we start focusing on the internal power that we have. And that is the power of thought, the power of focus. In the next section, he talks about, always remember that spirit makes things out of itself. In the world of the individual, the same process takes place. So thought is spirit manifesting things out of itself. And our thought manifests things in our lives. It is given to us to use creative power, but with the using of this power comes the necessity of using it as it is made to be used. So we must learn to focus if we want to change the things that we encounter in our lives. And then there is this really powerful paragraph that I don't remember ever seeing in Ernest Holmes' writing anywhere else that captured my imagination this week. We are all immersed in an aura of our own thinking. Isn't that an intriguing idea? We are immersed in an aura of our own thinking. So if you think about what you think about, and you imagine that that is your aura, what kind of aura do you have? Do you have an aura of happy dancing Buddhas, or do you have an aura of beauty and harmony, or do you have an aura of love, or do you have an aura of worry or fear or concern about things or anger or What kind of aura are you painting with your thoughts? Because you're creating this colorful life through what you're choosing to think. And choosing to think is an interesting idea, because as we are nurtured and socialized in our society, we absorb a lot of ideas from the society that are painting an aura of worry or fear. If you just look at the news, you can get really worried. Because they are painting an aura of fear that this universe is a fearful place to live. But there are other worlds that other people live in that don't look like the world of the news. And so as you look at the things you look at, ask yourself, what is the aura that I'm absorbing from this thing that I'm looking at? Am I looking at something that I want to contribute to this painting of my life? Or is that something I would prefer to focus away from and into something that would be beautiful? I was in Safeway the other night, and they had bunches of daffodils on sale for $1.99. And I bought two bunches of daffodils, and I thought, why did I only buy two bunches of daffodils? Daffodils are like the happy flower. And so I went back, and they were all cleared out. And other people, so it made me happy, actually, to think that all over Sterling, there were dozens of bunches of daffodils making people smile. And I could have said, oh, I wanted those. But I found a way to think about it, that when I look at my daffodils now in my living room, I think lots of people have daffodils. Lots of people are smiling because they have sunshiny flowers in their homes. And I always make a point when I get a bunch of flowers of taking a small number of flowers, one or two or three flowers, and putting them in my powder room so that when I go into the bathroom, I suddenly see this glorious flowers make me happy. And there's nothing more prosperous for me than to have flowers in the bathroom. That feels like incredible luxury to me. So I have three daffodils out of two dozen. So that's about, you know, a quarter worth of daffodils in the bathroom that makes me feel like a multimillionaire. So if you can find the things that make you feel prosperous and sprinkle them into your life, I hope Mary Rose doesn't mind my sharing that this is a thrift shopped Buddha, but it makes her happy, and it doesn't represent a lot of money. It represents a lot of joy, and joy is not about money. Joy is about attraction, and if you begin to vibrate joy, you will encounter things that can make you joyful everywhere you go. Whether it's daffodils or laughing Buddhas, there are lots of things that represent joy in life. So Ernest went on to say in that paragraph that starts, "We are all immersed in an aura of our own thinking. This aura is a result of all that we have ever said, thought, or done. It decides what takes place in our life. It attracts what is like itself and repels what is unlike itself. We are drawn to those things we mentally embody. Most of the inner process of thought have been unconscious, but we understand the law that all we have to do is embody consciously what we wish and think of that only. Then we shall be drawn silently toward us." And this is the same idea that Abraham Hicks is now calling the grid. We are consciously creating the mental environment that we wish to experience outside in our lives. Now, I was thinking about how we do that. Because when your mind is all monkey-minded, cluttered, and upset, it's harder to think about something that makes you happy. So, you know, it's easy maybe to look at daffodils and smile, at least for me. But it isn't always easy to find something to think about that feels good. So I was contemplating how to explain how it is to get your mind to focus if your mind isn't used to focusing. Because focusing your mind is a tool. It's a practice. And it's not something that comes naturally to us in our society. We aren't trained to focus. Now, I'm interested in the phenomenon of kids playing video games. Because kids are learning to focus on video games in a very powerful way that I don't remember having when I was young. I focused on jigsaw puzzles at times in my life, and most of us have the capacity to focus on a movie or something. What causes you to focus? Can you think of something that you do that the time just passes and you don't even notice? Projects, yeah.
Reading a book.
Reading, yeah. Yeah, some of us have ways that we focus easily. And so if you think that you have some way that you do focus easily, then you can affirm for yourself, I do know how to focus. I have the skill of focusing in my life. And now I'm going to apply it to focusing on what I want to have happening in my mind. I'm going to use that skill. So as I was thinking about that, I thought of the TV show Too Cute. Have any of you seen the TV show Too Cute? It's a show about kittens and puppies. And they start out with five-day-old kittens, and then they show you the same kittens when they're 3 weeks old, and then they show you the same kittens when they're 6 weeks old and 10 weeks old, and then they send them off to their new homes, and you see their new families, and you get to watch their first wobbly steps when they're still blind, and how they learn to use their hearing to go where they want to go, and how they use the sense of smell to find their mother, and how they engage in life. Well, they are too cute. There is an endless supply of cute in the progression of these kittens and puppies. They are just so sweet. And I was thinking this morning in my meditation of my mind as a basket of kittens. And sometimes the kittens are running in every direction, and the mother's kitten cat's job is to retrieve the kittens back to the basket. And the mother treats her kittens with tenderness and firmness. You know, she doesn't allow arguing with the pick up on the back of the neck and return to the basket, but she always treats them with love. And I was wondering if we could begin to treat our minds like tiny kittens, or puppies if you prefer puppies. Because they're unruly and they're wriggly and they're going all over the place. But you want to get them in the basket. And you want to say, there's a reason that we're focusing here. This is where nurturing and support takes place. So we're going to come back to this place where we are loved, nurtured, and supported. And we're going to hold our minds with the tenderness and care that we would give to tiny kittens. Now, sometimes we beat ourselves up in our minds. I don't know if you've ever done that, but I've certainly done that in my life. And I remember a time when I did that pretty much all the time. And I was very depressed. And I couldn't seem to move forward in my life. I was stuck. I was in a relationship that felt very abusive to me. And I've told this story many times before, but on the worst night, I was lying on the floor in the fetal position, and this man was standing above me, threatening to kick me. And I was terrified. But while I was laying on the floor, the most powerful thought I ever had in my life came to me. And I thought, you know, I don't think much of myself, but I know I deserve better than this. And that thought was a huge turning point in my life. Because I started to build on that idea, I deserve better than this. And I began to find the courage to move out of that relationship, to gather resources, to get help, to get a therapist and a lawyer and all of that, and begin to move into a place where I felt safe and empowered in my life. And I changed my thinking starting with that moment. And it took me another 6 months to get out of that relationship, to gather the resources that I needed to gather in order to feel safe to do that. But I was on a trajectory at that point to move into a higher plane of existence. And now looking back, it's like a totally different life. I can't remember what it was really like to be immersed in that kind of terror and live in a place where I didn't feel safe to go to sleep and stuff. But that was a part of my life, and I'm grateful that I can remember it so that I can see how far I've come by changing the aura of my thinking, by recognizing I deserve some value. I am a good person. And I stopped terrorizing myself in my mind. I stopped believing that if I were good enough, this wouldn't be happening. No, that's not the truth. I am good enough, and I deserve better. And I began to honor myself and my own value. And that shifted everything. Life can change. Life does change. And we are intrinsically valuable. We are intrinsically that divine energy, that divine power, that divine love. And so as we begin to shift this aura that we live within, we start to realize that our thoughts really are things. And the things that we're seeing are the results of the thoughts that we've had. Now this is I'm going to take this way further. Abraham Hicks recently said, posed the question for themselves, so what is a manifestation? And they said, a manifestation is your ability to perceive. That really is all a manifestation is. You see that, you say, that car in my garage is much more than my perception. I'm pretty sure as I punch it with my fists that it's substance. Imagine punching your car with your fists. That's wise. I'm pretty sure it was created somewhere. There were pieces of it brought together and put together, and it exists at a creation that is far more than my perception. And Abraham said, we say that would not be accurate. Everything that is only because it is perceived. And when you are able to alter your perception, then the manifestation follows suit with that perception. So the world that we see is our aura. We are seeing the world through the filter of our aura. And perhaps it's a filter of love, and perhaps it's a filter of fear or a filter of anger. But we are seeing what we see through that filter that's a part of our thinking. And so as we change our thinking, we change the filter that we see life through. And all of a sudden, we perceive really differently. The third segment of Ernest's Creative Mind and Success is called How to Attract Friends. And here's the part I highlighted in this one. As all is mind, and as we attract to us what we first become, until we learn to love, we are not sending out love vibrations. And not until we send out love vibrations can we receive love in return. So finding a way to send out love vibrations is the way to attract friends. And Ernest is so dogmatic about some things. And this is the part that's in the textbook that I've quoted many times. One of the things to do is to learn to love everybody. If you've not done this, begin to do so at once. Begin to do so at once. There is always more good than bad in people, and seeing the good tends to bring it forth. Love is the greatest healing and drawing power on earth. It's the very reason for our being. And that explains why it is that people should have something or somebody to love. And it brings us back to the idea of kittens or puppies or flowers or sushi. Everybody should have something to love. Everybody should have many things to love. And Ernest's dogmatic statement, one of the first things to do is to learn to love everybody, always makes me laugh. Because that is so big. If you're immersed in a I hate everybody place, then you can't get there from there. So what the Beloved tells me is, and Beloved is my guides, start where it's easy. Find something that's easy to love, whether it's daffodils or root beer or a puppy. Or I saw a cardinal on my fence today. It was really easy to love the cardinal. And there's a bunny that's been hiding out in the backyard for a couple of days now. And looking out the window in my suburban townhouse garden that's this big and seeing a bunny is just a total joy for me. So wild things make me happy. So you start loving the bunny. You start loving the puppy. You start loving the person in your life who's most lovable. And you develop the muscles of love. You start working out at the love gym. And you find things to love. You find things that are easy to love. You find colors that you love. You find fragrances that you love. You find tastes that you love. You find energies that you like to play with. You find music that uplifts your heart. You find art that you love. It doesn't matter where you start. Start where it's easy. And then as you begin to focus on what you love, it becomes easier and easier to love. The more you love, the easier it is to love, the more things you can love. And the aura of your being is love. And so everywhere you look, you see things to love because that's how it works. It starts on the inside and then it shows up out there. Abraham said, you can have a segment of your life where you're dominantly feeling lack that has one little part of it that is a very positive thing. And when you zero back in on that positive thing, you benefit from using that touchstone. So as you look at the easy things to love, call them touchstones and start making a list of the things that are easy to love. And carry it around in your pocket so that you have, in the moment when your thought goes awry and you notice it, that's the first thing, you notice it, then you can bring it back by looking in your pocket or on your wall. I have things posted on my wall everywhere. I remember when David and I were living together, I at one point cleared off all the cabinets that are covered with things in my house. And he came in and he looked around and he said, are we moving? There's always things on the wall. You know, there's always things on the wall. So find a way to remind yourself of what you love. Find a way to remind yourself of what's easy to love and go to the things that are easy. Go to the things that are easy. Practice the things that are easy, and all of a sudden the things that have been hard become easier. It gets better and better. So we are going to have a discussion about these things during our second half, but I wanted to end with some more ideas about this finding friends thing and finding people to love, because I was reminded that there's a lot of scientific research now that says that health and longevity relate to the degree of interconnectedness that you have in your life. And having pets and having friends and having social events and things to do actually increase your health. So coming to study group is good for your health. coming to study group will make you live a longer life if you're happy when you're here. And if you're not happy when you're here, go somewhere else where you're happy. You know, find places you can go where you feel a sense of community and continuity, because it's important to have that sense of connectedness. This scientist, Dr. Robert Butler, who wrote a book called The Longevity Prescription, says that we humans are social creatures, interdependent, adaptable, and flexible. As a species, we've evolved in a world in which we must rely upon one another, and as individuals, the more we can contribute to bettering that world, the better it will be. So as we interconnect, as we get together in groups and feel uplifted, then we share in that experience of uplifting others. Like Val said in her intention setting, she was going to contribute to the expansion of energy while being here. So you're not just coming to receive, you're coming to give of the attention and the love and the sharing of who you are just by being here. And if you look around the room, you see everybody smiling. It feels good. It feels uplifting. And it feels like that person is contributing to you by smiling at you. And that is such a gift. Even as something as simple as a smile is a gift that we can give each other. So we are building social capital by engaging with each other, by connecting with each other. And that makes us healthier, it makes us happier, and it makes us live longer. So that's a good thing. To sum up then, our thoughts create the things that we see by creating an aura around us that creates a filter that allows us to perceive things we want or things we don't want in our lives. So we have the power to focus, we have the ability to focus. And if we're learning to focus, we can treat our minds like a basket of kittens and just gently return the thoughts to the basket and focus on easy things to love more and more that makes our aura more beautiful, that makes our world more beautiful, that makes life easier. It's a very simple prescription. It's not always easy to do, but it is very simple to think about. And if we have those touchstones of love in our pocket, we can pull up that feeling of love wherever we want to. And that's what life's really all about. Thank you.
Thank you.